That's what they think in Houston. Coming into St. Louis, you beat the Cardinals 2-3. That is a good series win. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. BT is back after a week on the road with the Cardinals. Chris Ranji is out today. He'll rejoin us tomorrow.
Wow.
The smattering of applause. That's people outside of the studio
that
here
is
at 101 ESPN. Yeah. Not cool.
And I don't know if that he'll be back tomorrow.
I guess. What about Wednesday? Is he not going to be here Wednesday? Is he taking the week?
They're getting louder.
Oh, my goodness.
Holy smokes.
Love you, Ranch.
Yeah. But even though the Cardinals did fall in 2-3 to Houston, their prized acquisition of the offseason, Paul Goldschmidt, did pretty well.
In the air, left center, at the wall, that's now 6 in a row. 6 games in a row, home run hit by Paul Goldschmidt that ties the club record with Matt Carpenter, Mark McGwire, and now Paul Goldschmidt.
6 is a serious number.
Number. Yeah. That was fun to see.
That was pretty awesome.
Golly, man. We all know this. He's the key to it. If you're going to do something down the stretch, certainly there are other question marks that you hope get cleared up a tiny bit by the trade deadline. But that's the exclamation point. If he's able to do what he's been doing here recently, this Cardinal offense has a chance. NL Player of the Week now, Paul Goldschmidt. And they're going to need more and more from that guy. But if you're able to set the table and he's able to clear it, you're going to win a lot of ball games.
And people around him, as we saw on Saturday and yesterday, people around him need to perform too, as you said. There are some other things they need to clear up. Last week when things were really rolling, they had Paul DeJong hot, and they just have to have somebody else hot around him. But his hotness has a tendency to make everybody else better.
No, it totally does. When you have a presence like that in the middle of the order, and I don't care if he's hitting 2, 3, 4, wherever it is, if he is on fire like we've seen him be in the past pretty much his entire career, and now here recently, it does lift those around him. And Paul DeJong was so locked in Pittsburgh. I mean, he was barreling everything, even if his outs were just rockets at people. So they're going to need him also. You're going to need to get healthy. Marcell Ozuna being a very key piece there when you're talking about an offense that scares people. But right now, you're seeing steps in the right direction. I know you dropped a series against the Astros. If anybody's shocked about that, you haven't watched the Astros too much. I mean, they're really, really good. And I think it's fair to say, just from a talent standpoint, they're a cut above right now.
Yep.
Who knows in a given series, which would be the World Series, if in fact you're lucky enough to get there. You don't know how each of these teams are going to look, and you don't know how it's going to shake out. But the Cardinals have life right now.
Well, the Cardinal weekend didn't go as well as planned. Things weren't too hot for the Cubbies either.
Here's the 0-1. Yelich, a drive. Hit back in the left field. It's good! We are tied! That didn't take long. Wow!
A homer and a walk. Nobody out in the 10th. Kimbrel sets and deals. Curveball hit to right. Back Hayward at the track over his head and gone!
Justin Hero walks it up as the Brewers win it in 10!
That was Saturday night as Craig Kimbrel, for the second time in his career, allowed 2 home runs in an outing. On Friday night, the Cubs had led 2-0 heading into the bottom of the 7th when the Brewers scored 1. They scored 2 in the bottom of the 8th, won that game 3-2. And the Cubs' bullpen has been in absolute disarray lately.
Drop 5 of 7. I mean, and have given the Cardinals a little bit of breathing room is not the right term since they're both knotted up as this series starts tomorrow, but have given them a chance to be in it. Now, the Cardinals had to do their part of it also, but not everything is sunshine and lollipops over there in Chicago. And this series starting tomorrow is going to be awesome. This is fantastic. This is what it's all about. Every single time these two teams face each other, Randy, and you know this, you've been covering the Cardinals forever, it's always special, okay? Yeah. Always has a vibe to it. But you have them tied atop the Central. You have the trade deadline looming, and both teams looking to make that acquisition to put them over the top. This is going to be a special series. It's going to be a special run to the end. And certainly the Brewers are going to have something to say about it also, specifically with the offense. I know we'll get into their pickup here a little bit later, but they get another starting pitcher. But this is going to be fun. This is what it's all about.
yesterday in Kansas City. And by the way, the Cubs did win yesterday after losing the first two of that series. They won 11-4 in Milwaukee. And in Kansas City, things got a little out of hand for Trevor Bauer of Cleveland. The fifth inning got away from him against the Royals, and after giving up a go-ahead two-run single.
Watch this. He turns and fires it. Thankfully, he threw it against the board, so there was nobody in the seats there to get hit with it. But you don't do that when your manager's coming out. It's disrespectful. So Francona's going, what the heck was that? And Bauer goes, my bad, Skip, I'm sorry. And he goes, go grab some pie, and I'm going to see you in a little bit. And so he's in the principal's office right now, and then let them deal with it.
That's our buddy Rex Hudler on Royals TV.
Narrated it pretty much perfectly.
Yeah.
Except for heck, I think, was something else.
Yeah. I think it was an impressive throw by Bauer to start.
It was. Look, you're not going to make that throw unless you know you can get it out of the yard. All right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to turn around and throw one in the gap. It doesn't look as good. But he was able to do that. And
Oscar Mercado was shocked.
Everybody was shocked. Did you see his second baseman full on flinch? Like he dropped in. It was Mike Freeman. He's like, oh. He didn't know what was going to happen right there. Look, emotions get out of control. You get pissed off. You get angry. And I know he did face the media afterwards, and I don't know if he had a quick little chat with his agent first of what he should say, who he should address. He owned up to it.
He's the Microsoft Word template.
Yeah, my bad for throwing the ball over. Mm-hmm. By the way, real quick,
childish.
I think it was a tweet, or it could have been on Facebook, a comment I saw, but it was somebody saying, I'm not mad that Trevor Bauer threw the ball out of the stadium. I'm mad that Angel Hernandez called it a strike, which is pretty fitting in a situation like that. I will say this, though, about Trevor Bauer, and that is childish. You can't act like that. That's BS, and if I were his skipper, I'd be a little pissed off, too. But if I'm thinking about acquiring him, that I don't care.
No, you love that. That's competitiveness.
I don't love that, actually.
You love the competitiveness, the fire.
Yeah, I just don't like the pitcher.
Right, yeah. Not the way he displayed his competitiveness.
I'll take that over crying on the mound, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's fine.
There you go. There was a little MLB trade movement over the weekend, but it was a move that blindsided most people, including Buster Olney of ESPN.
I thought it was a joke. I didn't think there's any way the Mets would consider doing this, but that's apparently what's going to happen. That now that they have Marcus Stroman, it sets them up with surplus to trade Noah Syndergaard, perhaps trade Edwin Diaz. But the part that really doesn't make any sense is that Marcus Stroman going to the Mets, a lot of his trade value right now is predicated on the idea that he would help a contender this year and next year. Well, the Mets aren't really in contention right now, so they squander value right away there. You would have thought that if they traded Syndergaard, traded Diaz, that the focus would be on adding young, controllable players. Instead, they add Marcus Stroman. That's a shocker.
Number one, I think Brody Van Wagenen wants to win sooner rather than later. By all accounts, he didn't give up much. He gave up their number 5 and 7 prospects, who aren't top 100 prospects in MLB. And if they do move Syndergaard, they still have DeGrom and Stroman at the top of their rotation. So I can understand where Buster is coming from at first blush, but I also can see what Brody Van Wagenen is trying to do here, especially if he gets better prospects back if he moves Syndergaard. Now, if he doesn't, he's got a controllable 1-2-3 next year of DeGrom, Stroman, Syndergaard. That's a pretty good way to start a team.
Yeah, it is, but I agree with Buster Olney. I look at that one, and I don't see. First of all, on Toronto's side, you're not acquiring a top 100 prospect, first of all, you're setting the market for other teams that have thought about moving their guys. So if you are, and I know the Giants are likely to hang on to Bumgarner, but if you're them, you're like, well, hell no, I'm not trading my guy, even though he's not controllable for another year. I'm not trading him for your bundle of fake prospects. I want guys, so you kind of set the market there. I didn't understand the move. I still don't understand the move. Now, you hope that Brody Van Wagenen has other things up his sleeve to bolster his team, because his team doesn't look like they can compete right now or next year, really, the way they're set up, even with those controlled starters.
One thing about what Toronto did, with Houston, the Yankees, and the Dodgers all needing a starting pitcher, and we can throw Philadelphia into that mix too, but you have three of the richest teams with deep farm systems, you would think that the bidding would have heated up as we get closer to the deadline in about 47 hours.
Yeah. No, they might have jumped a little bit too early because especially with the extra year controlled for Stroman. Stroman's having a hell of a bounce back year. He struggled last year. He had his issues, but he's been great. And even if you're one of those teams, and the Mets don't fall into this category since they play, even though they brought the fences in, I mean, their place is very fair. But Stroman is the kind of guy, he could pitch at Yankee Stadium. He could pitch in Philadelphia. He gets tons of ground balls. Like that is a guy that as you get up against it, I feel like they could have leveraged more and more. Now, you knew it in spring training that they were going to have to move him. They had their trade talks. They did their back and forth. Stroman was vocal to the media about the way that they were handling him, and you knew at some point it was going to have to move on. But I didn't see this being the fit. I hope the Mets have an idea. Brody Van Wagenen is trying to salvage something. We'll see how this one works.
And by the way, you mentioned the ground balls. The Mets are one of the worst ground ball fielding teams in all of baseball.
Oh, good. Perfect.
So from that standpoint, it doesn't really fit either. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and those are your sounds of the weekend. Coming up, over the years, the Cardinals have been able to rehab some struggling pitchers that they brought to St. Louis. I think they should try it again. That's next on 101. OBT, the Cardinals need a starter, and one of the guys reportedly on the trade block is Tanner Roark, now of the Cincinnati Reds. This is a guy that worked with Mike Maddox in Washington for a couple of years. As a matter of fact, had a great year under Maddox in 2016, 16-10 with a 2.83 in 210 innings. He struck out 172 in 173 innings that year. Last year in Washington, when Mike Maddox left, he led the National League in losses. This year is pitching well at the Great American Small Park, 6-6 with a 3.95. He has given the Reds 107 innings. That's a guy that, once again, the price, if the price is right, and I would think that the price would be more along the Cardinals' lines, that's a guy that would fit their history of a rehab project that might hit big for them. At the very least, he's an innings eater. And we've talked all year about how that's one of the things they desperately need.
Yeah, so recently I've been looking at this trade deadline as you need to acquire a guy. Like a 1-2 type guy that takes a ball and just shoves. Because I do believe, even currently, you look at the Cardinals' rotation, I'm not sure who I want to give the ball to in a winner-take-all game. It would be really nice to be able to go out and acquire that guy. And while I still would love that, absolutely would love it, to what extent, as far as prospects go and a trade goes, I don't know. But I would still love the idea.
Let me stop you for one second. How would you feel, with as great as his stuff is, about Noah Syndergaard starting a game one for you?
I honestly don't feel super great about
me
it currently.
Either.
Yeah, no, and it's a great point. You're absolutely right. You just never kind of, you never really know. But at least I know that a guy like Syndergaard or somebody, you know, like him has been there, done that. I think there are a few question marks as to, you know, who right now would do it. But honestly, recently I've kind of moved off of that. Not that I still don't want it, but I need somebody more like you're talking about. Somebody that I can hand the ball to and know that my strength of my ball club, which currently right now I still believe is your bullpen, and you have a lot of arms, I know that my strength can continue to be a strength because he's not going to hand it off to them in the fourth inning. That guy can get deeper and deeper. He can eat up the innings. And even if he's a, you know, quote-unquote quality start guy where he goes six innings, he gives up three, he's got a 4.5 ERA, right now I'll take that. Like, that's I mean, maybe you need a couple of them. I don't know. Or maybe you need somebody else to end up stepping up. But I love the idea of whether it be a Tanner Roark or somebody similar to that. It makes a lot of sense, and you're right, it does fit the mold.
The Cardinals had so much success doing that with Dave Duncan, and it's unfair to compare anybody to Dave Duncan. But I do think that there's something to be said for a guy that's been around as a pitching coach like Mike Maddox, getting a guy back and knowing what makes him click and tick. Whatever problems Roark may have had last year, and like I said, he's pitching pretty well this year, but the guy that has gotten the most out of him in the past is Mike Maddox. So that's another reason I would like to see the Cardinals make the deal. And by the way, I'm like you. I would love to get that front of the rotation guy. I don't think that there's any legitimate number one that you say, okay, like Verlander 2 years ago.
Right.
Bumgarner and Bauer probably aren't getting moved.
Probably not. To me, the closest guy is Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I think so.
Or Greinke, if in fact you want to eat his salary.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued by Robbie Ray, but I think that's the guy now that the big boys probably that have more prospects than the Cardinals probably zero in on.
Yeah, no, I think you're right with and that's the thing. When you look down the stretch, when you have teams like the Yankees, when you have teams like the Dodgers that know that they have the team in place, not believe that they do. They know they have a team in place that can win a World Series. You are willing to go over your comfort threshold to go acquire a player.
Yep.
You'll throw in that prospect that may be a top two for you or maybe he's a top 20 in all of baseball because you believe it's going to win you a championship. I don't know if the Cardinals find themselves in that spot right now. And yes, they have had a drought of being in the playoffs. It's been three straight years. Four would feel like a century. I mean, mm-hmm. It really would. And I know that everybody's starved by it. But I also don't know if I'm at the point where I know one piece can put me over the edge where I want to sacrifice the next couple of years. Because I'll tell you this, I'd rather go 4 years than 10 of not being in the playoffs. And if you ship off the wrong prospects in a deal, you could find yourself in a situation like that.
And the Yankees are in the same boat with Davey Garcia. Evidently, Brian Cashman does not want to part with him, especially after parting with Justice Sheffield to get Paxson. So the Yankees are protective of their prospects. The Dodgers are as well. And Houston is the one team that seems willing to make that move. Now, Ken Rosenthal wrote this morning, don't rule out the Cardinals turning active over the next 48 hours. The team is talking about adding a controllable starting pitcher and a left-handed reliever. Their top prospect, AA outfielder Dylan Carlson, is believed to be off limits. And their number two, AA third baseman Nolan Gorman, likely is as well. Unless the Cardinals are getting somebody who is eminently controllable. And I'm saying, for 2-3 years, you don't trade either of those guys.
I wouldn't.
For a rental.
No, heck no, not for a rental. This is, I understand the frustration when people, and I'm sure if I check the text line in a minute, we'll get, quit overvaluing your prospects. I agree with that to a certain extent, but there are also guys within an organization, and I know that you can look back at this right now and say, oh, well, what about Alex Reyes? Had you shipped him off, you know, a couple of years ago, you could have had the world. And you're absolutely right. You are correct. You could have. And right now, they just have a wish and a dream and hope that he'll be that guy again. But you could have had an ace. And, you know, that's the difficult part in a situation like this. Unless the deal is perfect, I don't move one of those two guys. But I'm pretty much open to anything else within the organization. And oftentimes, it just adds, it takes another player as opposed to, all right, well, we're not going to give you Carlson, but we'll give you whoever it is. Pick a Junior Fernandez and a Rosarena. Maybe it takes two players when it would have taken one before. The Cardinals have the ability to do stuff like that.
I wonder how they will approach this left-handed relief situation. There's a ton of lefty relievers out there. Some won't get traded. Apparently, the Reds are reluctant to move Amir Garrett. The Giants may or may not move Will Smith, but apparently are listening intently for Tony Watson. Francisco Liriano is out there as a possibility. It'll be interesting to see when all these lefty relievers get traded, where who lands with the Cardinals? Because they're going to wind up with a left-handed reliever. We just don't know who it is.
You kind of have to at that point. And right now, I'm interested in pretty much all the names. I don't have the one guy that I have to have. I'm not going to sacrifice everything to get Will Smith. I mean, he's the guy that everybody wants. Mm-hmm. So who knows if they'll end up moving him. Liriano, I've loved him forever. And maybe it's just because he's had to reinvent himself a couple of different times. When you're talking about a one-year rental guy, I don't think you worry as much about trading within the division. And maybe some people had that thought when it came to Tanner Roark. But it's a one-year deal. So who really ends up caring if you're not going to be in the mix, if you can bolster your team for the future? That is the one thing that I believe that you know they will get. We haven't heard as much, at least from the Cardinals camp, about the starter. But it's pretty obvious that the need is there. I'm interested to see how that fits. If it does end up being like the Cardinals have always been, it'll be a guy that maybe we haven't even talked about yet.
Yeah. So let me just give you names. We already talked about Bauer, Bumgarner, Greinke probably will not move. Syndergaard,
real quick on Greinke, yes. Randy. Would you, if you were the Cardinals, I'm putting you in their shoes, mm-hmm. and not necessarily their tendencies of things they've done in the past, but they, I mean their financial flexibility. Would you be interested in bringing Greinke in on the contract? I believe he makes $34 million for the next 2 years plus whatever he's left this year.
If my prospect return is low, yes. But you also have to play that political game in your clubhouse because you figure that Jack Flaherty is going to be good. And when he gets to arbitration, he's going to say, well, there's a guy that's in the locker right next to me making $35 million. So I should get 20. I think you have to look at that.
No, that was easy.
But will an
show
arbitrator?
Show him your Cy Young, Jack.
Yeah, exactly. Will an arbitrator say no? That's the key.
Yes.
But yes, if the just with, as you mentioned, their apparent financial flexibility, they still haven't spent the extra $120 million that they were going to give Stanton, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would be willing to do that if the return was fine, because this guy, even at 35, he's not missing starts. He's still giving innings, and he still has great stuff. And I think he's an interesting guy to have on your team from a grit standpoint.
Yeah, he's quirky. He's a way different character than being around the Cardinals and being around Greinke in 2010. They don't have anybody quite like him. Like,
no.
He just ticks a different way, which actually might be good. Now, it might rub some guys the wrong way, but that's okay, too, every once in a while.
What about Mike Minor?
Yeah, I'm fine with Mike Minor. I'll take his teammate instead.
Lance Lynn?
Yeah,
I think it'll be hard to get him. Robbie Ray, we both like. And then the other ones, Zach Wheeler doesn't – I don't know that you dramatically upgrade with Zach Wheeler.
The thing with Wheeler is Wheeler can go out there and give you eight and you're happy, but we just talked about, we spent time talking about having a guy where you know they're going to give you innings. I don't know if he can do that for you. Like, I'm not sure.
He's hurt all the time. He's been the Giants traded him for Carlos Beltran in 2010, and we really didn't see him until last year. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. He was hurt for 7 years.
That might be too long, honestly.
Yeah, he's been hurt longer than Alex Reyes has.
Did you mention, by the way, the fact that the Brewers got a starting
Jordan
pitcher?
Lyles.
Which, welcome in.
Yeah.
Come on.
We're happy to have you there.
Yeah. Jordan Lyles, for those that forgot, was the one that the Cardinals beat up on a lot when he was a member of the Pirates.
Yeah.
Apparently, he doesn't fare so well in his career against the Cubbies either. But the Brewers are in a position right now where they desperately need innings. They need starters to just take the ball every 5 days.
That is BT. I'm Randy. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Our friend Bernie Federko is in the house, the Hockey Hall of Famer, and now a guy who's become quite acquainted with the Stanley Cup. Bernie will join us in studio next on 101 ESPN. Brad Thompson, Randy Carricker, great to have you with us, and great to welcome the Hall of Famer Bernie Federko into the 101 ESPN studio. Great to see you, sir. How are you?
Randy, I couldn't be better.
I know you're having a great summer.
Well, you know what? It's been an unbelievable summer. I'd like to get some rest is what I would. I mean, I don't know what I should say, but it's been a great summer that way. But, no, it's been I really wake up every morning now, and I really find it surreal that the Cup really is the St. Louis Blues Cup right now. And I keep following it all, of course, every day in the paper or wherever it is where who has the Cup and what they've done with it. So it's been very intriguing. It's been an awful lot of fun.
We were talking about this just in the break before we started. And right now, I mean, what you're talking about is how it feels like there has been no rest. It's been nothing but it's been Stanley Cup. And it's all great stuff. These are all beautiful things. But thinking about this from a player standpoint, I mean, some guys haven't had their day with the Cup yet. You're still waiting for that. The celebration continues, yet here we come. I mean, the hockey season is going to be upon us before you know it. That's a big time change, a great change, but a big change for the players.
Yeah, Brad. Well, you know, though, it's mostly the mental part of the game right now. That's where, I mean, physically they're going to be well rested by the time September comes around for training camp. But it's just mentally. I mean, I think they've been on such a high for so long right now. I mean, even you see the TV last night with Parayko and Petrangelo with the movie that was going on last night, Barbashev. I mean, they've got the biggest smile on their faces still. They can't wipe that off. So, I mean, it's a mental grind right now, trying to say, oh my God, I went through 2 months of extra playing. I really did win the Cup, and now I got to start again. And that's very difficult. But I think we all understand from what happened with the Blues last year is that you really don't have to play that well for the first 3 months. As long as you start playing well in January and put it together at the right time. And I think that that's been said for everybody that's played the game. You know that there's peaks and valleys during a season. You know that, hey, you have to put together at the right time, but you don't want to do that for the fans. Obviously, you want to win every game that you can, but I expect that it's going to be tough to start training camp. I think it's going to be fun for the first bit. We always say, really, when you come back after winning a cup, you watch the teams that usually start out really good, and then there's a little lull there after maybe a half dozen games there. They start okay. Now they can't find that mental toughness that they need to you know, really get them through maybe the next month. But this team, as we talked, this is a good team. This was not a fluke by any means. They put it together at the right time, and I think the pieces are there, and the goaltending's great. Binnington re-signed, and I'm liking what I see right now. And are we going to have another parade? God, I hope so, but I don't know. It was certainly fun, and let's hope that this continues for a long time.
Can St. Louis handle another parade?
I mean, I can, but you know what? That was one of the greatest things I've seen in a long time. I mean, I think we talked about it forever, that when the Blues, and we always said that, and we preface that word when, because we knew that it was going to happen sooner, hopefully, than never at all. But to see that parade and what happened with it and just the crowd downtown and just the excitement, the energy and what the guys did. I mean, that's what I was so impressed with. The guys going into the parade, they were going into the crowds, and they were letting the kids touch the cup and drink from the cup and all kinds of things that the guys were doing. I thought that was so wonderful. I mean, you don't see that in this day and age. Everybody's kind of afraid that, oh my gosh, if I go in here, something bad's going to happen. Well, the guys didn't do that. And I think that was just a wonderful, wonderful day in downtown St. Louis.
Blues Hall of Famer Bernie Federko is with us on 101 ESPN. And Bernie, I don't know how it works with other franchises when they win the cup, but I do know that the organization welcomed you alumni in pretty much with open arms. Have you guys talked about that? And how cool has that been for you to have the franchise allow you to be a part of it?
Well, it is. It's so special. I mean, I think that anybody that's ever played for an organization, once you put on a sweater or whatever you're wearing, your jersey, whatever you have, once you put it on, you're hooked on that. Now, it doesn't matter if you go from one team to the next. Once you put that one, especially ones that win, you want to make sure that you're recognized as a player that played for that organization. And I think that's what's been wonderful. I mean, yes, we've been welcomed, the alumni, and we've got 60 strong here in St. Louis. So they treat us very, very well. We have the alumni box. I mean, I know the guys were very, very excited. I mean, our dream was to win the cup when we played, and it didn't happen for us. And it takes the breaks. It takes a lot of great things to happen. There were a lot of good teams that have been playing for the Blues and have not won the cup. But to see this happen, to see it all come together, and I think that's why we're all feel very much more proud. We've always been proud to wear the blue note, but I think this really kind of gives us again that next step that the rest of the league, that the teams that have won the cup can say that they've done that.
Since you came into the league in 1976. Have you heard of or do you know of a player, active or retired, that enjoyed a cup as much as Brett Hull?
No. You know what? I have not. Actually, I've never met a player or, he's a dear friend of mine. I've never had played or been with a person that is so full of life. I mean, that's Brett. I mean, I think everybody that doesn't know Brett, Brett's one of those guys that he's out there all the time. He has such a great time. He's full of life all the time. And he was so happy about this. I mean, Brett has always said that he never did want to leave St. Louis. I mean, he came here from Calgary. I mean, this was the first place where he made his name, and he scored those 86 goals. I mean, he won the Hart Trophy here. He did so many great things here. And it was the biggest disappointment that he had was leaving St. Louis. Yes, he won a couple of cups, one in Dallas, one in Detroit. But I think, the rest of us, like me, coming here and being here for 13 years, it was most important for the Blues to get a Stanley Cup, not for just the organization itself, but for the great fans. I mean, I've ran into so many people that have been season ticket holders since 1967 that are just so happy, and it was always the same thing, before I die. Well, it's happened now, and I think it's just been a wonderful run.
Bernie, to me, that was one of the most impressive things, because we know that the current Blues team, the fact that the franchise had never won a Stanley Cup, like, that's not their burden to wear. I mean, it's they go out and they do their thing and they try. But the idea of it was not lost on them. Like, they realized exactly like what it meant when they won, wanted to share that with everybody. To me, that's special. I feel like, and maybe this is a broad statement, but we kind of live in a time where everybody's about me. That was a big of a we move as you could possibly have, is the way they handled winning the cup.
Yeah, Brad, and I think, you know what, after 52 years, I mean, even though it's there's a new team every year and there's faces change, bodies change, you still, when you hear that over and over and over, you say, we got to do this for us. We got to do this for the city. We got to do it for everybody else, not just ourselves. And I think they really, I think they kept that in mind the whole time. And I think that was really one of the things that they talked about all the time. Guys, we're not winning this just for us. We're winning, you know, that puts a lot of extra pressure on them. And I think that's what probably happened in game six. They got beat here at home and everybody, you know, what, some people paid $10,000 to go to the game. Kevin didn't, but, you know, there's lots of people that obviously wanted that to happen, including myself. I mean, we all were ready to go down. I mean, and my kids.
Get your plans already.
All the plans were going to be on the ice with the cup and this and that, and then it didn't happen. And a lot of people would have said, okay, it's over right now, but it wasn't. I mean, there was 35,000 in the rain at Busch Stadium. I mean, the Enterprise was sold out for the next thing. And so, yeah, there was a lot of pressure on the guys, but they went into Boston with the same attitude. I mean, I was on the planes with them there and back all the time, and the attitude never changed, ever. They all had that, hey, you know what, it's just another game. We lost this one. We got to win the next one. I think baseball, you guys have more of that attitude than we do in hockey.
It's
because
season.
You guys got 162 games you play. But for us, you know, you lose a game, it's almost the end of the world. But it wasn't for those guys. And I really think that was a great part of them. And I think that really Craig Berube was a big part of that. He said, you know, come on, we don't have to worry about what happened yesterday. Let's make sure we are better tomorrow. And I think that's kind of way it. And the way the guys were able to put the pressure on themselves and do it for each other, do it for the city, I can't say enough about that.
Bernie, we talked to Mike Liut before Jordan Binnington signed the new contract. And by the way, Ludi represents Binnington, so he's going to have a biased view. But I trust Mike. He knows goaltenders. He says, look, this guy is not a flash in the pan. Did you see anything in there with him that leads you to believe that he's anything less than what we saw?
No, I don't. I mean, I've talked to Mike. I was up with Mike Liut in the alumni box there, you know, in game during game six and a little bit, and we've talked about that. But no, I can honestly say I don't see any weaknesses in him. I mean, obviously, this is a small sample size. He only played, 30 games, and then he played, of course, every game in the playoffs and won a Stanley Cup and was probably a co-Conn Smythe Trophy winner, both him and Ryan O'Reilly. I'm sure it was a really hard pick because certainly Jordan really deserved to get all the accolades the way he stopped the puck. But, no, I mean, he's got a great catching glove. I mean, his lateral movement is very good. He skates well. He does all the right things. And I tell you what, he knows how to turn forget what happened just the last shift. I mean, he's really got that he's blessed with that, just forgetting about what had just happened. I mean, let's hope he's not a flash in the pan, but from what I saw, I think that is he going to be standing on his head like he did in the Stanley Cup Finals? Let's hope so, but let's hope he doesn't have to, but I don't see him faltering at all.
It was nice to see him let loose, too, because he played everything so close to the vest, and his answers to the media were great. Him after they won, and there are some people, you know how it is, you just keep a focus on them because you want to see what he does. He let loose, and it was awesome.
And I'm glad to see him let loose, and I think everybody wanted to see that happen. And I think that, actually, to be honest with you, Brad, I think that probably hurt him in the voting for the Conn Smythe because of that. I mean, oh, hey, you know, a question would answer wouldn't even really answer.
Right.
So, I mean, these are the guys that vote for the Conn Smythe Trophy. So you got to make sure you tiptoe lightly with that. But, I mean, again, who cares? I mean, he was trying to win the cup. He's not worried about anything else. But, he has obviously emotion. And it's been in check the whole time. And, you know what, it's great to see him. And I'm sure he's having a heck of a summer. I'm sure
I'm
he's
sure
enjoying
he
himself, and as he should be.
No doubt. Now, you know everything that goes into a season like this. I mean, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the unity, the bonding. You look at the team coming in this year, there's very little turnover. That's got to be a good thing, right? I mean, these guys you just went to war with and you get a chance to go do it again. I would think that would be a benefit.
Absolutely, Brad, and especially when, you know, some of the guys are going to get paid. Obviously, guys like Binnington, Sundquist, these guys deserve to get more money. I mean, Edmondson still has arbitration, but, I mean, all these things are happening. Yeah, and the guys that are tied to contracts, I mean, there's a couple of guys now are in the last years of contracts, you know, with Petrangelo and with Shen. We'll have to see what happens with that. But, no, I mean, once, you know, you get the taste of it. They want another one. I mean, they're not going to say one and done. I look at the way the team is set up right now, and let's not forget we've got three or four kids down in the minors that are very good players. And, you know, Kyrou, I mean, Robbie Thomas is only going to get better. I mean, he was hurt there at the end of the year, and he was one of the best players really that the Blues had in the playoffs at 19 years old.
Yep.
With Kyrou at 20, and you got the, you know, the Russian kid.
Clem Costin.
Costin, yeah, and he's only, you know, he's 19 years old as well. So you got that. You got that big Mikola, the defenseman. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's good some good young kids that are waiting and knocking on the door. So, I mean, I think there's some competition here in the squad, which is really good. But when you look at paper now and you look what they did last year, I mean, this is a team that certainly can contend once again.
Bernie Federko has a long-standing relationship with EMB Granite. You're recording some commercials
yes,
for them today.
Yes, I am. Kevin Bowie right here is, you know what, he's one of the owners, and he's here, and he's always got a smile on his face. And he wanted to spend the $10,000 on tickets, but I talked about it. I said, you know, wait till they go to $12,000. So he didn't wait long enough.
So you're here with them. And by the way, I loved the job that you and Jeremy Rutherford did with your book, My Blues Note. I know that you're very proud of it, and that's still out there and available for Blues fans.
It is. Thanks, Randy. We've had a good time with it. I mean, I've had a lot of coming. I mean, actually, during with the playoffs going on and all this stuff, I mean, it was longer a hockey season, so there was more people coming up to me talking about it, and a lot of people read it. So, I thought JR did a really good job. I mean, we tried to keep it as simple as we could, try to just kind of just make it as entertaining as we could. So we got a lot of good, positive reviews from it. So we've really enjoyed it. I was hard to do. I'm glad I got it done. I'm glad I'm not going to do another one now.
The only thing I missed is that I heard some of the layover stories when the team was hanging out in airports, probably against your better wishes. But it seems like you guys had some fun in airports during layovers during your career.
Randy, we had so much downtime. I mean, it's so wonderful for the guys now. You get on a charter after the game, you're gone from place to place, and it just makes it very, very easy. But, I mean, we had to entertain ourselves a lot. There was a lot of delays during the winter when you're on commercial airlines, so especially with some of the connections we had. So we spent a lot of times with a lot of stupid games, and, of course, we weren't allowed to drink during those times, too, in the airport. That was against the rules, so we had to find stupid things, too. Put a little fishing line on a dollar bill and throw it out in the middle, and when someone would go to pick it up, pull it, all those little things that, I mean, how old are you guys? You know, really? But we did. We had to entertain each other, shaving cream on the head, and, I mean, when you fall asleep, so a lot of stupid things, but, hey, it passed the time, and you know what? It brings you closer together. Camaraderie is so important in professional sports, and you got to be friends with all the guys, and that was certainly a way that we were able to keep our friendships still lasting to the days now, and when we're old now and going senile for the most part.
That's what it's all about. Bernie, always great to see you. Thank you very much for stopping by. Have a great rest of the summer.
Randy and Brad, thanks for having me on. It's always fun to be with you guys. And you know what? I'm so glad you guys got the Blues hockey, too. I look forward to listening to you and all the stuff going on here on 101 as well. Yep. With the Blues hockey.
We're fired up. We're going to be talking Blues wall to wall. Bernie Federko with us on 101 ESPN. Coming up, a trade today in Major League Baseball. Maybe the Avalanche will start now. We'll talk about it in our Hot Topics of the Day next on 101 ESPN. The Milwaukee Brewers have addressed their need for starting pitching by acquiring right-hander Jordan Lyles from Pittsburgh for right-hander Cody Ponce. Cody Ponce to the Pirates and Jordan Lyles to the Brewers. So with Stroman getting moved yesterday, Jordan Lyles getting moved today, maybe we'll see a few more deals before our show is up.
I hope so. Yeah, and I hope that the Cardinals are involved in at least one of those deals. One, because I want the team to get better and better, as we all do. And two, it's stuff to talk about, you know, and we can always love that on a Monday.
Material is always a good thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, especially when it's a big shoe to drop. Now, the Jordan Lyles isn't necessarily a big shoe that's dropping for Milwaukee. We saw Jordan Lyles the other day in Pittsburgh, struggled mightily against the Cardinals. But you never know. You get him a little change of scenery, a team that is in the thick of things, and maybe you get the best out of him. He's got good stuff. He's had his struggles certainly against the Cardinals, against the Cubs as well, which if you're keeping score, the two teams that he's going to need to beat for the Brewers to be doing what they need to do. But they needed innings badly. They needed starters. They needed and I think that they're in a position also where they want to go for lower risk guys.
Yes.
As far as prospect goes, well, that's Jordan Lyles.
The Cardinals and Cubs have played 9 games this year. The home team has won every game. Chicago, their 6 wins at Wrigley. The Cardinals, their 3 wins here at Busch. And the two teams will open a 3-game series tomorrow. I don't know what Chris Bryant is going to do tonight. The Cubs in town, and I hope he's not too bored. But tomorrow night, it'll be Yu Darvish for Chicago and Adam Wainwright for the Cardinals. And then it'll be Kyle Hendricks against Miles Michaelis for Wednesday's tilt, and then Thursday is an early start, so keep that in mind. And for Thursday's matchup, you've got John Lester against Jack Flaherty. That's a 6:15 game at the ballpark.
Well, I hope the trend continues, Randy, as far as the home game winning.
Yeah, me too.
Home team winning all the games.
Three.
Yeah, that would be nice. Now, I'm not necessarily expecting it, but as we were talking about off the top, things have not been great for the Cubs here recently. They dropped 5 of 7, and they have not lived up to what they expected they would be as a team. Now, that same exact thing can be said to the Cardinals about the Cardinals at this point in the season, but here we are. These two teams come into it. We're right before the trade deadline. They're not at atop the division, and throw the records out for a second. I feel like just that fact right now that we're at the end of July and the Cardinals and the Cubs are tied for first place, to me, I feel like that is more so where the expectations were set rather than the record. Forget the record. Are you at the top of the division right now with a chance to get better at the deadline? The answer is yes. Now you got to go get better at the deadline.
The Nationals trail Atlanta by 5.5 games in the National League East. In the wild card, the Nationals are they're actually even with the Cardinals and the Cubs, so they would be one of the wild cards if the playoffs started today. But today, Washington put Max Scherzer on the 10-day IL with a rhomboid strain.
Well,
what's a rhomboid?
I always hate it when I think it's like upper back, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
It? I think so.
Big muscle.
Yeah, big old muscle. I always hated it when I hurt my rhomboid. That's a big deal when you lose a guy like Max Scherzer, and he's had a couple. He just got off the IL, did
yep,
he not?
He did.
For a similar thing. So you worry about that a little bit, but even on days where Max Scherzer isn't starting, the Nationals are figuring out ways to win ball games.
Yeah.
They've been like the hottest
66-49.
Yeah, they've been great. So it doesn't change to me the way that they approach their deadline. I still think they have enough depth. Maybe they look at another starter if they get some news that Scherzer isn't going to be the guy, but they're or isn't going to be healthy for a little bit. But they ain't selling off, and that's a team that I really thought was going to change the landscape for everybody else. I thought Rendon was going to get dealt. Scherzer's name was a possibility.
It was.
A couple of months ago. You know, him getting thrown out there. They had a couple of different guys that could have been on the move, and right now, they not only have they saved their manager's job, but they look like they're about to do something special.
Let's get to some football here. The Dolphins hired a new head coach in the offseason. Brian Flores is his name. He put together a staff, really meticulously interviewed people to make sure that he had the best staff in place.
Well, that's what anybody would do when they take over a job, Randy.
Oh, yeah. You get the best people. And here we are 6 days into camp. And Brian Flores has fired his offensive line coach, Pat Flaherty.
Pat, what happened?
I don't know.
I hope we get rumors that Pat's like going to jail or something, because this makes very little sense that you would put together your staff and fire your OC.
Now, according to a source communicated with ESPN, he said this move was football-based with nothing to do with an off-field incident.
So sounds like there's something to do with an off-field incident. I mean,
yeah,
who mentioned that?
Does, yeah. So Dave DeGuglimo has been hired as the Dolphins' new offensive line coach.
Great googly moogly.
Isn't that great? That's like a St. Louis Rams move.
See, or currently an Oakland Raiders move.
Right,
like,
yeah.
That's a move that should be featured on Hard Knocks. And
totally,
I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows exactly what the Raiders have up their sleeve? And I believe Hard Knock starts on the 6th of August. And by the way, I can't wait to see that. But that is, that's a pretty terribly awful move in the first week of training camp.
So, and finally, on our hot topics of the day, this tweet today from Le'Veon Bell of the New York Jets. Did you see this?
No.
Le'Veon Bell tweeted, "This is long overdue. But I want to take a moment to apologize to all the fantasy owners who picked me last year. I'm sorry I couldn't pull through for y'all, but trust me, this year is about to be way different. I'm bringing the trophy this year. Le'Veon blank you. Come
Did
on.
Did you say thank you?
No, I didn't. I drafted him last year with the second pick in the draft.
He said sorry right before the draft. You'll do it again.
I am not accepting.
No?
I will.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I will.
Given the chance. I have a similar question here as we go down the fantasy realm, and I do believe that for a lot of people, that's the only thing they care about when it comes to NFL right now. As much as you hate it, fantasy keeps dragging you back in.
Yes, it does.
I got two names for you. And I want to know your interest in trading them, because they're both drafting them, because they're both first rounders. Mm-hmm. Melvin Gordon is one of them.
Not after my experience with Le'Veon last year.
Ezekiel Elliott.
More so, yes. Because I think Ezekiel still has to overcome the off-field stuff.
But I don't. He is not conducting his business as if he has to still take care of his off-field stuff. Like,
no, he's not.
He basically is going there asking for the world, yet he just keeps getting himself in trouble.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. And this he's great. Yeah. He's fantastic. He's led the league in rushing a couple of years in a row.
Right.
Like, he's been awesome. I understand that part of it, but I'm kind of terrified to draft either one of those guys from a fantasy aspect.
Now, I don't think I would take Gordon with a first-round pick. I think it goes that far. With Ezekiel, I probably wouldn't take him with a top five or six pick. But I would probably still take him in the first round because I think at the very worst, he'll be back by game three or four. And a couple of years ago when he got suspended, he was productive when he actually returned and played.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned if there would be some more trades going on during our show. Hell, one's happened during this segment.
I like it.
Jason Vargas. Mets Jason Vargas has been traded to the Philadelphia Phillies. I don't have the corresponding move. Can't be a ton. But apparently Jason Vargas is on the move.
Okay. So that leaves probably two left-handed starters. And those would be Robbie Ray and
Mike Minor.
Mike Minor. There you go. So it's starting to happen. There we go. And those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. Coming up here in the fast lane, we have a brand new fighter coming your way in the 4 o'clock fight. That's next on 101 ESPN.